Well, ladies and gentlemen, we're ready to begin our program for this evening. I hope you enjoyed your dinner. Please continue to eat your dessert. Coffee will be served, so enjoy that dessert. We did have, this week there's been a lot in the news about the memo that was released by the Republicans, a confidential memo, and so we had planned to have Congressman Dana Robracher was going to be here this evening. But as you know, enjoy the ambiance there. They warn you not to do live programs with animals, small children, and congressmen, because you never know what's going to happen. Well, unfortunately, they were voting on the spending bill. And so they were coming down to the deadline tonight of the government closing down, and so Congress is still working. So Dana was not able to make it back, but he sends his regards, welcoming you to California, and I think he may try to stop by this weekend at the event. However, we have a really good program lined up for you tonight. We always have Plan B. I remember working with some of you know Gary Bauer. I was Gary's campaign chairman in Louisiana when he was running for president in 1999. And I took him around to all the rural churches in North Louisiana. And I remember we were in a place called Shudrant, Louisiana, First Baptist Church of Shudrant. And the Sunday best was a new pair of bibbed overalls. And we had a dinner on the grounds afterwards. And so we were out there, we were eating Gary is getting ready to make his speech, and so he gets up and makes his speech, and he takes questions. The second question was asked. There's a guy in the back. He said, "All that sounds real good, but when do we go to Plan B?" And so I'm standing next to Gary, and Gary's like, "What?" He looks over at me, goes, "What's Plan B?" "I don't know." And so Gary says, "Excuse me, sir, I don't know. What's Plan B?" And the guy looks at him and goes, "When do we get the guns?" So we have Plan B, but Plan B is actually breaking news. This week here in California, there was a very promising court case decision we've seen a number of these cases in the courts. In fact, the Supreme Court taking up the masterpiece cake with Jack Phillips. And that is currently before the court. In almost all of these cases, the Bakers have gotten the bad end of the deal when it comes to free speech, religious liberty, and the LGBTQ XYZ agenda. Well, this week here in California, our speaker tonight, one of our speakers, represented a client, Christian Baker, Kathy Miller, and the outcome of this case was much different. The Baker prevailed, and Chuck Lemandry, who is our guest speaker tonight, is going to tell us about that. Let me just tell you a little bit about Chuck. Many of you know him. He is a resident here in Southern California for more than 30 years. He has passionately practiced law and successfully represented clients in business litigation, property liability, medical malpractice, insurance, construction, real estate, environmental, maritime, and personal injury cases through his private law firm. However, since 1983, he has handled numerous high-profile civil law and pro bono religious liberty cases, including defending the Mount Soledad Cross, David Dalyden in the Center for Medical Progress, San Diego Firefighters, Priests for Life, Jonah, and many other organizations and individuals in state and federal courts, as well as before the United States Supreme Court. And as I mentioned, his most recent high-profile victory for religious liberty and free speech came just a couple of days ago here when a California Superior Court judge ruled in favor of Christian Baker, Kathy Miller, who turned down an order for a same-sex wedding cake. Chuck and his wife, Barbara, have 5 children, and they live in North San Diego County. Please welcome Chuck to the podium. Chuck, thank you so much.
Thank you. Thank you, Tony, and thank all of you for your warm welcome. It's a privilege for me to be here tonight to address you, and I think it's only fitting we're surrounded by this military aircraft that was designed and built to defend our freedoms, particularly our religious freedom. But unfortunately, much of the threat to that today, as you're probably aware, comes not from external forces and outside military powers, but from our own courts, the least democratic form of our government. And Thomas Jefferson warned that the courts could turn into an oligarchy if, in fact, they started seeing themselves as the sole means for interpreting our laws and basically taking rights away from the people, which we saw with Roe v. Wade, where they went against the majority of the states on the issue of abortion, and more recently with the Obergefell case, where they went against two-thirds of the states on how marriage should be defined. And those of us who were involved in that fight, I was heavily involved in Proposition 8, which passed in California by a majority of the vote of the people to preserve traditional marriage as defined as it always has been by one man, one woman. And we knew that if we ultimately lost that battle at the U.S. Supreme Court, which we did by, again, one vote, that these types of challenges, which this case I'll be telling you about tonight, would be soon be visited upon us. And indeed they have. And unfortunately, as Tony referenced, most of these battles have not gone well for Christians standing up for their sincerely held religious beliefs. So it's so refreshing and encouraging to have been part of a case where we did get a very good result just Monday evening of this week. I had the privilege of representing Kathy Miller, who's a devout Christian woman who runs a very successful bakery in Bakersfield, California. Bakersfield's more conservative than most places in California, so she's had a lot of community support there. But nonetheless, when she was not able to agree to make a wedding cake for a same-sex couple, they complained to the Department of Fair Employment and Housing, which is an analog of the Civil Rights Commission that went after Jack Phillips in Colorado. In that case, which is substantially similar to this one, as you know, is currently pending before the United States Supreme Court. I had the privilege of working with some of those great lawyers from the Alliance Defending Freedom and to be present there in court on December 5th when it was argued, and we actually came away feeling pretty encouraged, which is probably why the lawyers with the Department of Fair Employment and Housing in this case against Kathy Miller marched into court in mid-December and tried to get a temporary restraining order to get the court on 24 hours notice to order her to, or force her to sell wedding cakes to same-sex couples or stop making wedding cakes altogether. And fortunately, this is where prayers matter most. We got a fair-minded judge, a judge appointed by a Republican governor. He's a conservative Republican. He's a Christian, and he takes his job seriously and takes the Bible seriously, but most important, takes the Constitution seriously. So he said to the lawyers on the other side, I'm not going to decide this on 24 hours notice. I want to hear from both sides. There's fundamental rights on both sides. The same-sex couple is claiming their rights are being discriminated against because they're not able to purchase a wedding cake from this one woman. And by the way, they had no trouble getting a wedding cake. As soon as they went online complaining that day, and which was obviously pre-planned, as soon as my client said that she could not in good conscience make the wedding cake, they grabbed the custom cake form, ran out, immediately went to the media. They had television cameras there within hours, and my client was getting hate messages and death threats that evening, so much so she had to shut down their website. And then we found out the same-sex couple who had been married 8 months earlier was going around to different venues with tape recorders trying to get someone to admit on tape that they would not provide service to them. And we had declarations, so it was pretty much a setup. We don't think this lesbian couple was shopping for a wedding cake so much as a lawsuit. But the liberal State Department of Fair Employment and Housing in California was all too happy to accommodate them and do their bidding. So the judge did set it for a hearing last Friday. We had a chance to fully brief it and had the folks at ADF look at the briefing as well, because they had done that great briefing in the Masterpiece Cake case. And we had the argument. It was 2 hours total, which is kind of a lot to dedicate to something like that. It was right after lunch, and during lunch there had been a rally in front of the courthouse. Hundreds of people showed up, and several of the pastors from the area, and it was great. A display of support for my client. Of course, there were people there on the other side, but it was all peaceable. And one of the interesting comments the judge made in this 7-page single-spaced decision he issued Monday evening was trying to force my client to use her artistic abilities to make a wedding cake, which is a form of expressive speech. Because a wedding cake, as you're all well aware, is oftentimes kind of the centerpiece at the reception, and the couple takes pictures with it and all that. It is a form of statement of celebrating that event. And for a client, a baker like my client, a lot of time and effort goes into it. Each cake has to be individually designed and created. And the couple works with the baker in terms of the shape, the size, the color, the taste, whether there's going to be writing on the cake, whether there's going to be toppers. And obviously my client would not be comfortable putting two men or two women on top of the cake, or as a question was asked in the Masterpiece Cake case, oral argument before the Supreme Court by, of all people, Justice Ginsburg, the most liberal justice on the court, asked the ACLU lawyer, well, would the Christian baker have to write on the cake, God bless this union, if the same-sex couple wanted it? And there was a very pregnant pause, and it was actually a deafening silence in the courtroom for about 10 seconds until Justice Kagan jumped in and said, well, we don't have to decide that today. But they do have to decide it in every one of these cases because, as I argued last Friday, this couple could dictate to my client, if she agreed to bake the cake, that they'd have to put the writing on it that that she wanted. So this judge got it right. These arguments have been made before, but we found a judge who was willing to apply the law the way it was written and the way it was intended to be applied by our founding fathers, that no one should be forced to speak a message that goes against their sincerely held religious beliefs. He said it would be analogous to him having gone down to that rally before the hearing and telling one side of the debate they cannot speak. And he put in his decision that would be the stuff of tyranny, and he'd have no part of it. So very strong words by a courageous judge. And the case has gotten tremendous publicity. I've had, you know, more than a dozen interviews since Monday, and it's being covered by the national media. It's in the Washington Post and Washington Times. So hopefully people on the Supreme Court, you know, are going to hear about it and read it. And let this plane pass. And hopefully they'll find Judge Lempe is his name, David R. Lempe's, wisdom to be influential, and they'll take it to heart and issue a similar decision that could be binding authority for the entire nation, because all of our rights, as you know, are at issue here. And if they can make one Christian baker kowtow to the radical homosexual agenda against her sincerely held religious beliefs, they can, and I assure you at some point will, do that with each of us, or at least those within our inner circle of family and friends. That would be inevitable. So we have to continue to fight on, and by the grace of God, we'll continue to enjoy victories. I'll just mention in closing, and Tony had referenced, I've been part of the Mount Soledad Cross litigation. That went on for 27 years, probably the longest running religious liberty case in the history of the country. I was involved for the last 12 years. And many times I was told, it's impossible, you can't win, you're wasting time, you're wasting money. I put in $2 million of pro bono time, and I did that before I even had my own nonprofit law firm, Freedom of Conscience Defense Fund. So it was largely my own money financing it. But I knew it was important, and the other side never gives up. So we can't give up. And we saw one miracle after another in that case, and finally culminating in a victory in 2016, and that cross will now be there as well. It should be for all times as a symbol of our freedom. So I think I was supposed to be limited to 10 minutes, and I've probably surpassed that already. And I was asked to answer questions, which I'm happy to do. If Tony, would you like me to do that now? If there's any questions, either on this case, the other case I handled that involved the homosexual agenda was representing, as Tony mentioned, four Christian firefighters are ordered to be in the San Diego Gay Pride Parade. And we had to try that case twice. We won at the trial court level and won at the Court of Appeal, and now, and that's a published appellate decision. So no government employee in California should ever have to be ordered against their will to participate in a gay pride parade or any political event, not on the job and not in uniform, certainly. And it's not that they would not provide emergency services. They actually work in the gay community in San Diego, and they're happy to do that. They'll go to the gay bars and bathhouses, do whatever they need to do. Even though they're married men and Christians, they're happy to serve all people in the community. But in that parade, they were asked to just be there as though they were supporting what was going on around them, and they could not in good conscience do that. So with, again, the your help and support, and by the grace of God, we'll continue to have these victories, and we'll continue to preserve our constitutional rights and our liberties that all these airplanes were designed and built to do as well. So I'm happy to answer any questions. Yes, sir. Right.
Comments on it, but we also, our people have been through, put to the mill, that owned the bakery,
yes,
and paid large fines for, and I was wondering to get your thoughts on the fines that they've done. And I'm not sure where the case is at this point as well, but I know you have some knowledge of it. So
sure. I think what's going to happen with the Masterpiece Cake case is going to be determinative of all of those bakers' cases, and hopefully other cases involving the wedding industry and the vendors who service that industry. I'm not exactly sure where that case is right now in the system. I imagine it's on appeal, and they're probably waiting to see what happens with the Masterpiece Cake case. But yeah, the fines can be staggering. I believe the woman Baronell with the who wouldn't supply the flowers for a same-sex wedding, she got hit with like $130,000 fine, and really has her everything at stake. Our client, 40% of her business is wedding cakes. So if they ordered her to make cakes for same-sex couples, which she can't do, or stop making cakes, she would essentially lose her business. She couldn't stay open and lose 40% of her business. And if the case had gone forward, then the same-sex lesbian couple would ask for damages, and the state, if they prevailed, would have gotten all their attorney's fees and costs, which is where it could really hurt. At that level, after a full-blown litigation, getting to trial or going up an appeal, you're talking potentially hundreds of thousands of dollars. The nice thing about this decision, and I've got a phone call tomorrow at 11 with the attorneys for the state, we've told them you either drop this case or we're going to go after our attorney's fees and costs as the prevailing parties. And I believe we'll get them, because under the law, if you sue someone on a lawsuit intended to chill the expression of their First Amendment speech in California, in a lot of states, there's something called an anti-slap statute. And you bring that to not only stop that litigation in its tracks from the get-go, but you can get your attorney's fees and costs. And that's what we're going to go after at this point, because this judge's decision said as a matter of law, the state cannot prevail. So they not only don't get their preliminary injunction at this early stage to put my client out of business, but he's saying even if the litigation were to go forward at this point, based upon the undisputed facts that she would not agree to make the cake and it was because of her sincerely held religious beliefs, the state cannot win as a matter of law. So it puts us in a very strong position, and we intend to make a very strong statement, particularly if they don't voluntarily dismiss the case. And we'll find out if they're going to do that tomorrow, so stay tuned on that. Any other questions? One more, and then Tony. Yes, sir.
I believe you said they live in Bakersfield, which
correct,
is a fairly conservative area.
Yes, sir.
And they've experienced quite a bit of community support.
Yes.
But have they also suffered some personal and family and business negative.
Yeah, no question about it.
And loss, and tell us about the personal impact that they may have suffered as a result of standing up for their Christian beliefs.
Yeah, well, like I said, the first night they got so much hate mail through the email system, she had to shut down their website, and then there were people, you know, boycotting their business, and there's been a constant harassment, and you know, some of the emails that have been sent that their employees have gotten have been so vile, you know, I would not even repeat it because it's profane and abusive. It's interesting, one of the pastors, an African-American pastor who spoke at the rally last Friday before the court hearing, said the people on the other side who are angry, it's because of their own sin. You know, there's a sense of guilt, and I think it's kind of telling. And there's a lot of anger out there. And although most of the rank and file people are supportive, most of the media aren't necessarily. So they've gotten a lot of bad publicity, and that's been very hurtful to them. And my client's father has been writing saying, you know, this is terribly, terribly stressful for my daughter and family and friends to have to read these editorials in the newspaper that are so scathing and mean-spirited in the attack. So no one wants to be called a hater or a bigot, and the other side knows that, which is why they always use those terms to shut down the debate from the get-go. My client, who is, you know, a small and sweet woman, has a lot of courage, and she realizes, as the Lord said, we're going to be persecuted for our faith. Yeah, but she's willing to endure that persecution because she believes that in honoring the law and honoring the Constitution and honoring God, that we're all going to be the better for it, and ultimately God will be the judge as to whether her actions were rightful. So that's, I think, the attitude that we all have to have and be guided by that and be inspired by that example. Should I take one more question, Tony?
Yeah.
Okay. Last one then. Yes, sir.
I'm not familiar with California law. Is she able to sue for damages, for stress, and all these other things? Can she get on a very proactive attack?
Well, what we told the state lawyers, two things. One, if they don't dismiss immediately, we'll file an anti-SLAPP action to get it dismissed and to get our fees, but we're also going to consider filing a malicious prosecution action, which at that point, because there's no probable cause for them to go forward with a lawsuit. The judge has said that the state cannot prevail as a matter of law. So if they don't dismiss it, we probably will, after we get it dismissed, to sue for malicious prosecution and get her emotional distress damages as well. Yes, sir, that's our plan at this point.
Okay. All right.
I could answer questions afterwards too.
Chuck, thank you. Thanks for joining us tonight, and thank you for the work that you do. I know you're a fighter, and you don't give up. And I know increasingly it's so important that we have lawyers. You know, we got Colby May here. We got Kelly Shackelford here. We've got others that are part of CMP, that were the ADF and others. And look, this is where a lot of these battles are being fought and won. So thank you, Chuck, for being a fighter and staying in there. And this is very positive news, the outcome of this case this week. Well, speaking of never giving up, how many of you are not going to give up on California? All right, there's four people here not giving up on California. Well, we have another resident of California here tonight, another leader from California that is come tonight to give us kind of an update on what is happening politically here in California and actually share a little bit of hope of what is to come. Senator Mike Morrell was born and raised in California. He was married here, raised his family here, and opened two corporations here, Provident Home Loans and Provident Realty, both incorporated in 1989. Senator Morrell now represents California's 23rd district, state Senate district. He currently serves as vice chairman for the following committees: Legislative Ethics, Energy, Utilities, and Communications, Public Employment and Retirement. Senator Morrell also serves on the Insurance, Banking, and Financial Institutions Committee and the Transportation and Housing Committee. He and his wife, Joni, have been married for 40 years, and they have three adult children. Their daughter, Kristen, first priority is her family, and she also teaches on American exceptionalism at Arizona Christian University. who is Lynn Munsell, is president of Arizona University. He's a CMP member. Their oldest son, David, works as an associate legal counsel for the White House. Matthew, their youngest, is an operations manager at the Kirby Center, Hillsdale College's constitutional think tank, also located in Washington, D.C. So please welcome Senator Mike Morrell.
Well, thank you guys for allowing me to be here. Mr. Perkins, thank you very much. And to my friend, I served with Martin Garrick for quite a few years. That was awesome. But what's really great is to be out of Sacramento and here with people who are normal. So that's a breath of fresh air. I flew down, got off the plane from Ontario and drove here, and then I had to go to the bathroom. So, but anyway, well, again, thank you. Look, I am glad. I was in real estate, waited till our kids got older, and then I ran for politics, believing out of Proverbs that as fathers we have a responsibility to leave to our generation the same opportunities we had, right? Especially religious freedom and the ability to try to make a dollar. And so I'm working hard at trying to do that in the most difficult state in the United States. But people have asked me, is there hope? And I have to be honest with you, I've had my doubts over the last few years, my first 5 years. But the last 2 years, I'm going to share with you in a few minutes here some of the things that I see that are changing. And I hope you see them for what they're worth. So the answer to that is, yes, I do believe there is a change. But we as believers, it's our duty. We have to draw the line in the sand, plant the flag, and we have to say stop to these immoral things, ladies and gentlemen. Money's important. As you know, what Clinton campaign says, it's all about the economy, stupid. But when you look at airplanes and jets and but when you look at the great thinkers, whether it's the Tocqueville, John Locke, or the philosophers Aristotle, Plato, Socrates, it's more about morality and religion. It's about virtue. And so that's what I think California is missing. But, you know, California has 40 million residents, don't remember. It's too big to lose, ladies and gentlemen. It's too important because you've heard the saying, as California goes, so goes the nation. What happens here spreads like in the Colorado that used to be a red state, but a lot of Californians left there. For you people, am I not right? You're a purple state now. And so we have to stop it here. But think about our rich heritage that we have in California. We had the 12 missions, right, for evangelism. Campus Crusade for Christ, we were talking about earlier, was founded here as World Vision was, as Focus on the Family was. The Azusa Street Revival started here. I took my daughter when she was young right up here in the Big Bear Mountains to Forest Home. And on the other side of the lake is a big cross. And at the bottom of the cross is a plaque dedicated to a young man who at 17 years old came to that retreat home. And there he believed God had called him to preach the gospel. And that plaque is dedicated to Billy Graham. And so when I think about all those things, plus the church I go to, Calvary Chapel has a ton of mega churches throughout. I got one fan back there. All right. There's a lot going on, and there's a rich heritage here that we should appreciate that has spread throughout the United States. We spread our best as well as our worst, don't we? But some of the challenges going on is we are a progressive state. I disdain that word because it sounds cool, like people want to progress. But their definition is the same as socialism. They believe in the expansion of the bureaucratic state. And history has proven over the last 5,000 years that as government expands, liberty contracts, and freedom, prosperity soon cease to exist. So basically, through all the high taxes here, they're taking our money, and it's very tough for businesses to want to launch here, and that's why some of your nation's top 500 CEOs for 11 years in a row has rated California the worst place to do business. But Lord willing, we're going to change that. But we are $1 trillion in debt. We have 34% of the nation's welfare, which that is a shame, ladies and gentlemen. We've dropped to 47th in education. And another thing that's happened recently, if you haven't followed it, if you're not from California, but our illustrious governor and his fellow Democrats had AB 109 and then Prop 47, which has released what they refer to as nonviolent criminals into our street, which harms our families and our children. And they consider, there's a whole list of these crimes, and I won't name them all, but a couple of them that they consider are nonviolent are sexual trafficking of minors, as well as rape. Think about the reprobate mind a person has to have. And we have these people in Sacramento. But we're going to make sure this next election that they own everything they've done to our state, guys. because we need to go as Christians on the offense. We're too nice sometimes. We play a little bit too much defense. Thank you. You know, but as you grace the Capitol steps up in California, it's a beautiful building. It's impressive, the gleaming halls and the shining floors. But I just want to share from my perspective what I see, some of the things I go on. And I was reading an excerpt from the Screwtape Letters by C.S. Lewis. Do you recall that? And I just want to share sort of some of the things I see that goes on there so that you can understand the seriousness of why we need to save our dear state of California. Screwtape says this: "I like bets much better than bureaucrats. I live in the managerial age, in the world of admin. The greatest evil is not done in those sordid dens of crime that Dickens loved to paint. It is not done even in those concentration camps and labor camps. In those we see its final results. But it is conceived and ordered, moved, seconded, carried, and minuted in clean, carpeted, warm, and well-lighted offices by quiet men with white collars and cut fingernails and smooth-shaven cheeks who do not need to raise their voice. Hence, naturally enough, my symbol for hell is something like the bureaucracy of a police state." And ladies and gentlemen, our capital in California has become a very dangerous place. It's the most dangerous capital in the United States. And this is going to also affect America. So once again, I do ask for your help. But again, I believe things are changing, because here's a few solutions. Number one, there's two things most of us heard that we shouldn't talk about when we were growing up. That's religion and politics. Am I correct? You know, the only two things, when a casual review of history shows the two ways men oppress other men, either send them into 1,000 years of bondage or set them free, is through those two institutions of religion and politics. So those are the two we have to focus on. Alexis de Tocqueville, in his book Democracy in America, he spends over 700 pages searching for our greatness. He notices that we have two vast oceans, which separates us from our natural enemies, great natural resources. But after that, those 700 pages, he found the secret to America, and he said, it's when I entered the churches and I saw that the pulpits were aflame with righteousness. And then de Tocqueville makes this quote that America's great because America's good. And when America ceases to be good, America will cease to be great. So we have to encourage those in the pulpit, as well as ourselves and our own lives, that we have to be more vocal, not the sin of silence, but we got to return those pulpits to the people that said no to the wrong and yes to the good. Second thing we have to do is we have to restore the very things that made our country great, and that's limited constitutional government. We have to restore it back to its rightful place in American political life, because that's what gives us our freedoms, our rights, our religious freedom, freedom of speech. First nation to ever be governed by consent, where we no longer have to bow a knee to a king, but now we can elect our own leaders. Those are wonderful principles that was set down for us, which complements our faith. It also ranks the citizens above the state, which isn't happening today. But it also, we have to remind government leaders, political leaders, that they're no longer going to be their masters, but they need to be our servants there to serve at our pleasure. Wouldn't you agree? Amen to that. Well, I want to share three key indicators, leading indicators, why I believe there's more than that, but why I believe God has not written California off. But first, I want to share a little bit about the life of Winston Churchill. As you know, the odds were great against Great Britain. They were outmanned, outnumbered by the Nazis. Germany had just seized Denmark, Finland, Norway, and France. And now London was being bombed 57 consecutive nights in a row. But you got to love Churchill. He's going down in flames. If you saw the movie, nobody in Parliament wanted to keep him, right? He was a lone wolf in that. But here's what he says, and I think this is a good thing for us to remember in these days that we live in. Churchill says, "When great causes are on the move in the world, stirring all men's souls, drawing them from their firesides, casting aside comfort, wealth, and the pursuit of happiness, in response to impulses at once awe-striking and irresistible, we learn that we are spirits, not animals, and that something is going on in time and space and beyond time and space, which spells duty." And in those darkest hours, divine providence did deliver Great Britain. And ladies and gentlemen, I believe he will deliver us too, as long as his people are willing to do what it takes to win these fights. So the three things why I believe things are on the move. And again, I've learned this from a little bit of history, but again, Churchill, we can call on. They've always had politically correct talk. They've called it different things throughout the ages, but they had it in Churchill's days. The Nazis did it as well as the socialists in Great Britain. And Churchill says that's because they've run out of things to say. And so the only thing they can do is accuse and blame. Does that sound familiar with today, ladies and gentlemen? But Churchill also says that means they're weak and we can take them as long as we have our arguments down. And we can do that here in California because I work there every day and I see what goes on. And they cannot defend anything they do, and their policies are ruining the state, and everyone across America knows it. Second of all, I got an intern program going. I went a little bit crazy because Dems have three times the staff as what we do. So I started hiring interns, about 40 a year. And, you know, we train them on how to run an office and a Senate, but we also train them in the select writings of the Federalist Papers, the Constitution. We introduce some writings by Plutarch and ethics by Aristotle. And it's been great to see them learn. And I have a whole very good appreciation for this next generation. Not all of them are in tune with what's going on, but there's a small percentage, and that's all it takes is a few small who are serious-minded. And these young people are learning these things, and we're passing them on. We've got them in the White House now. We've got them in congressional offices, Senate offices, up and down across America and even in California. And hopefully that next generation seems to me like many of them are truth seekers. And then the next thing I'd like to share was when my first 5 years, there was one pastor in the Capitol. Then a second one came and asked me, do you need a second pastor? And I said, sure. A few weeks later, a third came and said, hey, would you like a pastor? A bunch of pastors come up. We have 50 of them. We can have two of them up here a week to pray and encourage you guys. And I said, actually, I like something better than that. What we need here in this capital are men of God to hold us accountable for our bad votes. That's what we're really looking for. We've got two guys over here who will encourage us. We need men to come and get tough, right? So he came back a week later and asked me to share that with 50 Baptist pastors, and they came in and they got the message. And since then, I've had the opportunity that something's going on, ladies and gentlemen, to speak to 100 pastors at a conference in Long Beach, 100 in Riverside, 200 in San Bernardino, Visalia. I was asked to go back to D.C. and speak to 162 California pastors back there and do the closing speech. And then next week, I have two different sets of pastors coming up. Somewhere between 270 and 300 will be coming up. And these guys have asked me to put together a strategy to train them how to take back the state. And so remember, there was nothing the first 5 years I was there. They're calling me, I'm not calling them. And pray for me that I come up with a strategy, right? So these are all good things. And I'm trying to keep track. I ask them, how many people are in your congregation? How many in yours? Some of them have few people. Some of them have 15,000. Others have radio programs, live streaming. As near as I can tell, they influence about 3 million people. Now, I don't know if they're going to tap into that for us, but those are enough numbers for us to turn around California. Even if we can get half of those, I'll be pretty darn happy. So let me close with this last thought here. There are some serious challenges in California. I could sit here all night and name them, but there's always great opportunities too. And again, if we can turn California around, Iowa and Nebraska is easy, right? And Louisiana might be tough, but. So Abraham Lincoln, I found a note that he had written to Congressman Turnbull in 1816. I didn't find the note. His secretary, I should say, found his note after she was cleaning out Abraham Lincoln's desk a week after his assassination. So President Lincoln had never sent this note off, but he was concerned that this war of slavery was going to start, because he did not want a war, but he knew we couldn't continue on with slavery. And it really, I think, applies to where we are today, and hopefully you can connect the two. So let me close with this. I've given it its own title, by the way. I've entitled it The Tug, as in tension or tug of war, I guess. Lincoln writes this to his friend. He said, "Let there be no compromise on the question of extending slavery. If there be, all our labor is lost and ere long must be done again. The dangerous ground that into which some of our friends have a hankering to run is pop. Have none of it. Stand firm. Again, I say, stand firm. For the tug has to come, better now than at any time hereafter." Well, as Lincoln said, the tug has to come. Ladies and gentlemen, may I suggest to you, the tug is here in California, and we need your help. Thank you. Questions? I have one caveat, guys. Only easy questions, okay? So you don't want to stump me. Yeah, yes, sir.
Chance to take the governorship back.
Well, we may have a chance to take governorship back. Sometimes we have a lot of Republicans running there. We got one that has ability to raise some money. It all depends how much the other two Democrats beat up on each other. I'm here tonight because my pastor, Jack Hibbs, any of you guys know him? Yeah, he's a good guy. He just called me up a couple of days ago and wants me to run for the U.S. Senate, so I'm contemplating on that, by the way. And we think the party believes I can get at least in the top two spot on that one. But the governorship, I'm not so sure on that. That takes a lot of money, as does the U.S. Senate, as you might imagine. But there are a lot of things happening, and one of the things, too, in the Republican caucus, we're developing a business plan. It sounds odd, but we haven't had one for 10 or 12 years. And so I'm helping put that together. And the best department's going to be policy and communication department, because one of the things we tend to do, us Republicans, is we only talk and do op-eds within our districts, which are Republican districts. So what we're doing is we're sending op-eds. You know, I've sent them to the Bay Area, by the way, and I've gotten some great response. You know, human nature, there's actually people that think like us, and if you put a reasonable op-ed together, they seem to like it. And so we're trying to get more of that so we can get candidates in those areas elected. It's going to be a long process, but I do believe California is coming back. I hope it comes back this election, but there seems to be a lot of action. You know, before you get results, you have to have a lot of action for you folks that have been in business. And there's a lot of moving parts right now that seem to be moving our way. My friends across the aisle, they're fighting. A lot of the sex scandals happen to be happening to them, and they seem to be imploding. So hopefully we can take advantage of those opportunities. Anything else? Yes, either one of you good-looking gentlemen or lady.
Two of the four people that clapped.
All right.
Well, we're both natives of California, and I want to thank you for coming and speaking with us. We brought 170 pastors from California pastors, to Washington, D.C. last year. You came and spoke to us.
Okay.
With Church United.
Yeah.
And we are leaving here on Sunday and traveling to Sacramento with 100 more pastors to go to Sacramento for a couple of days. So the pastors are really on the move in California. So we're working hard.
And
it's gonna change.
And the guy who is leading the trip up there asked me to put a strategy together. He said, these guys are ready, willing, and able, and they want to know how to divide and conquer and take back California.
And I just want to say, we were at the inaugural when the rain started to fall.
Uh-huh.
And Franklin Graham said, this is a sign from God. And the wind in the flag, in the California flag at this moment, is a sign from the Spirit of God that He is moving on this state, and He's using you and some of us. And I just want to thank you for that.
That's a nice compliment. Thank you. Somebody else? Yes, sir.
I just want to hear some bad story about Martin Garrix since you're here. You got anything to tell on him on?
Yeah, you know what? I actually have a lot of bad stories, but since his wife's here, I'm going to spare her the embarrassment. But no, Martin's a good guy. You know, I only have good things about him. He's a gentleman, and he even would straighten my tie when it was on wrong. I mean, he's really proper. So you can't ask for a better guy than Martin Garrix, man. He'll have your back. Yes, sir.
Yeah, I wanted to ask about California's war on Trump, because I think there's something like 17 lawsuits now that the Attorney General has launched against Trump and his administration.
Yeah.
Is there any way that can be stopped?
Well, I don't know if it can be stopped, but we've got a couple ideas. One of the things that's been launched, hopefully you guys will appreciate this, you may not, but they get up on the floor all the time and crucify the guy. So Senator Jeff Stone got up the other day and started talking about their sexual harassment things and naming names, which you're not supposed to name another senator's name on the floor. And he pointed out, well, you're naming Trump's name. And basically what he was saying, you guys want to go Trump? Let's talk about your sexual indiscretion. So we'll see how much longer that continues. So we're going to try to stop that, though, until Republicans start getting in trouble for that. Yeah. Okay, ladies and gentlemen, Tony Perkins, thank you very much, and God bless America.
Thank you very much.